The 920 KVEC Podcast Network is presented by the Slo County Real Estate Podcast with Hal Swayze. Up-to-date information on the local real estate market on your time. New episodes weekly at the podcast link at 920kvec.com and wherever you get your podcasts. California DRE 01111911.
When it's not always raining, there'll be days like this. When there's no one complaining, there'll be days like this. Everything falls into place like the flick of a switch. Well, my mama told me there'll be days like this.
All right, welcome to the Dave Congleton program on News Talk 920. AM 96.5 KVEC, our hometown radio. This is Gary J. Freiberg sitting in for Dave, and certainly hope that your day has been going well. I'm not going to try to upset that. You know, if anything, I want to augment it, but I do hope that you've been having a good day. I want to mention before Dana Dykstra-Coy joins us, give you a little preview that coming up next, we're going to be talking with UC San Francisco Sociology Press Professor Dr. Stacy Torres, who wrote an article on the perceptions of older adults. I can relate. Coming up after that will be Sharon McQuatt, and she is the executive director of Hospice San Luis Obispo. You know, there's three different hospice organizations in San Luis Obispo, so she's going to explain the difference. Then coming up at the 5 o'clock hour will be Greg Goff. He's co-founder of Shebang, and they're having their 10th annual music, art, and camping festival. And then last from 5:36 is Jolene Bayback, and she grew up on Alcatraz, and her dad was acting warden on the day of the escape. So that's what's coming up. But for now, I really am excited to be able to have Dana Dykstra-Coy. She's an award-winning photographer who didn't start out that way. It wasn't until retirement that Dana pursued her passion for photography and is now, I think, perhaps the most published photographer in our county. So we'll start off in saying, Dana, welcome to the Dave Congleton program on News Talk KVEC.
Hi, Gary.
Well, I've been wanting to interview you for a long time, so I'm certainly glad that we are together today. And I want to build a little bit of a roadmap before we get to the meat of our matter. And let's start with what was your career before you retired?
So before I retired, I had a couple of careers. But the primary that I went to school for and got a degree in communications for was reporting, news reporting. Oh. And from what I recall, didn't I interview you for the Telegram Tribune?
Yes, and I still have it on the metal plate. It was
I was the police and investigative reporter for the Tribune.
But that's not what you interviewed me about. It had nothing to do with the police or investigative reporter. So, but yeah.
No, nothing like that. I'm sorry. It was a feature on you.
Yes.
A good, happy one.
Yes. but your last that you, when you retired, you were with the probation department. Am I remembering correctly?
Yes. So I went from police reporting to becoming a probation officer, a juvenile officer, and a lot of it had to do with, as a reporter, covering all these crimes of these kids going to prison for life.
Oh, boy.
There was a lot of gang activity at the time, and I started feeling more and more like, maybe there's something I can do than just write about all these people going to jail. And so I applied, and changed my career right there.
Yeah. And how many years were you with the probation department?
11 years.
11 years.
Mm-hmm.
And how long ago was it that you retired?
I retired I think it was 2012.
Okay. All right. So it's been a while now. You've slipped into the role. And the reason, everybody, that I wanted to establish this is how the transition, sometimes when we come out of, go into retirement, people can have difficulty on knowing what to do. And one of the main things is to have purpose. And so I was very interested in how Dana went from being in the probation department in a completely different career to, being the award-winning, again, most published, I think, photographer in our county. Well, it's true. When did you discover your talent for photography?
Well, I actually, as part of my journalism degree or communications degree, was required to take black and white photography classes. And back then, it was all darkroom. There was no digital. So I already had to do that for my degree. And then when I was a reporter, there were times where we couldn't get the illustrious Dave Middlecamp and or Buck Dyer out there, and so those of us in the field would need to take our own photos. I was really reluctant to do that because I just wanted to write the story. I didn't want to do both, and so they laughed at us, a couple of us reporters who didn't want to do that, but we did it for the job. I already knew the basic fundamentals of it, and then after I retired, I probably went about 25 years without seeing a sunset or sunrise in this beautiful county. And I just decided I want to see the sunrises and the sunsets because my hours were so long. I was gone from morning till night, and I never got to enjoy this beautiful place the way that I can now. And so I just started going out and looking at the sunset, sunrises, the sea otters, the wildlife, playing tourist, I guess, and brought my camera with me and realized I started having a passion that hadn't been there before. It was not something I had to do. It's something I wanted to do. But I went back to school for digital because I didn't know digital. I went to Cuesta College. And the instructor, I need to give him a plug, Tony Hertz. He was a longtime photographer at the Tribune, and I worked with him years ago, and he was my instructor. I really recommend if you're going to change, get the education or get whatever it is that you need to do to excel at it. And that's what I did. I went to school and I learned all the software. I mean, the world technology has changed dramatically since yes. the 80s when I went to school.
So then, in discovering your passion, you went back to school and learned about the technical part of photography.
Mm-hmm. Yes. There's a lot to do. You know, I learned he taught the Lightroom, organizing and photo editing. There was a lot to learn about that. I know some people can do Lightroom by just following a video or something. I'm not like that. I need hands-on, and I needed him there to show me how to do it. And mm-hmm. so I went back to school.
Mm-hmm. Well, mm-hmm. Were you surprised by this, that you had no idea, but then all of a sudden you discovered a passion? Did that surprise you?
Well, the passion came first because if you're going to commit to a course like the one I attended, it became a full-time job or full-time work, I should say, because his assignments, he would require you to go out and maybe take 100 or 200 photos of a particular subject matter to learn all the different ways to photograph. Mm-hmm. So, and I went to school, it was 2 days a week, and so you had to do that for every day, and I invested hours and hours and hours into it. So,
right. Right.
It was a pretty difficult course for me, actually.
Mm-hmm. But you had the passion driving it, and
yes.
That's really important. I do need to mention, everybody, if you just so happen to join us here on News Talk, KVC 920 AM and 96.5, our hometown radio. This is Gary J. Freiberg sitting in for Dave, and we are talking with Dana Dykstra-Coy, who, after retirement, discovered a passion in photography and has become, I think, the most published and very award-winning photographer. We got a lot of ground to cover, but we got a little bit to do, so stay here just for a couple minutes and we'll be right back. All right, good song there, Greg. Everybody, welcome back to the Dave Congleton program on News Talk 920 KVC and 96.5 FM, our hometown radio. This is Gary J. Freiberg sitting in for Dave, and with us is Dana Dykstra-Coy, and she went from working with the probation department and other careers, but probation department for 11 years, and then has become our county's most published and award-winning photographer, and that's what I'm interested in. Dana, we were talking about the passion that you have for photography that you discovered after your retirement. But how was that transitioning? You had been a certain person in law enforcement, and now you're becoming a photographer. How was that for you?
Was
it difficult?
Not really, because when I look back, my degree is communications, and so I think the more difficult was going from a Tribune reporter to a probation officer, but my job was writing reports, communicating with families, and so that passion for just loving people and I don't know, it just kind of transpired from there to getting out and enjoying where I live, and for the first time probably in years, because mm-hmm. of the very long hours that I worked.
Mm-hmm.
And I finally had some freedom to just, I think the curiosity part that fed into me being a reporter, the curiosity about my world, and it all just kind of flowed. And so I could look back at it and say that it all kind of intertwined, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah.
But I love where I live so much, and I never got to really enjoy it. And so it just became an extension of that passion. And then I started posting my photos on my social media, and it was about, after about 2 or 3 years of this, I got a call from Carol at the Sea Shanty, the owner of the Sea Shanty, and Carol Kramer, and she's on the board of the Visitor Alliance of Cayucas, and said, could you do for Cayucas CA, which is the social media tourism accounts for the county, could you take those photos for us and just do it for Cayucas and not just doing mm-hmm. it on your personal page? And so it became a career by the board, the Visitor Alliance of
right.
Cayucas, looking at it and saying, we would like to have you join our team.
Well, that
so it became a new career.
Yeah, which must have been very gratifying, I would assume.
It was.
Mm-hmm.
It was.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I don't want to put words in your mouth, but part of my angle in this conversation is for people that maybe either in retirement, on the cusp of retirement, or retirement a couple of years away, would you say, advice to those people, would you say trust your passion? Would that be?
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
Absolutely. Trust your passion. And I was posting all the time on my social media pages just because it was something that made me happy. It wasn't something where I was trying to get a job or angling for attention. It was just,
what you wanted
you know,
to?
Just wanting to share the beautiful place where I live and just posting, and I started getting a following. And I wasn't expecting it. I wasn't expecting it to turn into a new career. It was just tapping into that passion. And, you know, I will say that people will find you if you allow the passion to dictate what you're doing, rather than trying really hard to do it for the purpose of finding a job, or just do it through the passion. You're absolutely right.
I like that. Yeah, just do it. Yeah, mm-hmm. Do it for the passion. What I'm hearing you say is that your retirement has been more than you ever imagined. I mean, you didn't plan on this, and as you're explaining how it unfolded, which I really think is a great thing. I do want to mention that we're talking with Dana Dykstra-Coy, and if you want to check out her work, she has a website, Dana, D-A-N-N-A, Joy. DanaJoyImages.com, and you can see some of her work there.
I have to correct you there. Oh. I ended up, the website I only use to sell my calendars now, I ended up taking it down because I work over 40 hours a week now for the county, doing the running the Cayucas, California pages, and taking photography for the County Business Improvement District, CBID. So it was getting to the point where I had to take it down because I couldn't keep up with requests or portraiture requests or photo requests, things like that.
Okay.
So I am at, on Instagram, Dana_Joy_Images. And then I'm also Dana Joy Images on Facebook.
Okay, and people can see your images there.
What they can, yes.
Okay.
And I sell the calendars at the end of the year, usually October through December, and I sell cards.
Is there a place where those are being sold now?
Yes. They're sold at Morro Maid in Morro Bay,
right.
Zubage in Morro Bay,
mm-hmm. Right by
Cayucas
the theater.
Pharmacy, and the Sea Shanty in Cayucas.
Oh, well, great. You have retail outlets.
Yes.
That's really
good. And then Coalesce also, at Coalesce in Morro Bay, she sells the calendars there.
Nice, nice. What do you think, what do you think your specialty is?
My specialty?
Yeah, you're in photography. What do you think your specialty is?
Probably the seascapes, landscapes. I know it sounds kind of odd, but sometimes I will go out and find a spot and just spend a lot of time at that spot, kind of feeling like what the environment wants me, how the environment wants me to present. I don't just walk up, do a couple snaps, and leave. I might leave and be gone for hours. Looking for, you know, the right light, the right positions, the right, I don't know, I just, and it's almost like I feel like the nature or the environment's trying to let me know how it wants to be portrayed, and that's what I do. I just do it until I feel something, and then go, okay, I'm feeling like this is going to be a good shot, and so...
Mm-hmm.
It might take hours, though. I enjoy being able to get out there and hike and walk and...
And then be patient.
Spend time.
And then be patient.
There have been times, like, with the wildlife. One of my favorites is the mama sea otters with their pups.
And I was going to mention that. And unfortunately, we're down to our last 30 seconds, and I was going to ask you about that shot. It's just wonderful with the mom and the baby on her and the look on their face. It just, I've wondered, how does she get that? Everybody, we're talking with Dana Dykstra-Coy, as we've been discussing, award-winning, most published photographer. Check out her work at Dana_Joy_Images on Instagram. Coming up next is Dr. Stacy Torres. We're going to be discussing her national article on perceptions of older adults. Everybody, you're on the Dave Congleton program on News Talk 920 KBC. This is Gary J. Freiberg, Hometown Radio. We'll be right back. All right, welcome back to the Dave Congleton program on News Talk 920 KVC 96.5 FM, and of course online. And then, we podcast. All of our interviews are podcast starting the next day. And this is Gary J. Freiberg sitting in for Dave. And thank you. Thank you very much for being here. And I want to mention that coming up next is Shannon McQuaint, who is the executive director of Hospice San Luis Obispo County. And she's going to detail there's three different hospices, not just one in our county. And then they are also kicking off their Walk for Healing annual fundraiser. But I'm really looking forward right now with to have Stacy Torres, Dr. Stacy Torres, and she is an assistant professor of sociology at UC San Francisco. She's author of At Home in the City, Growing Old in Urban America, and that's going to be out in January of 2025. But she's written numerous articles on aging, and what caught my attention was her national article that was published in the LA Times entitled, Why Do We Talk About Older People Negatively?, in which she states, older people themselves are not the issue, but the way we talk about them is. And that was really intriguing. So, Stacy, Dr. Torres, welcome to the Dave Congleton program in San Luis Obispo.
Hi, thank you so much, Gary. It's a pleasure to be on with you.
Well, good. Well, thank you very much. And I know, you're in New York right now?
I'm in New York City right now, yeah. I was born and raised, and I actually care for a sister who has multiple disabilities. So I pitch out here, helping her when I can.
Oh, well, that's wonderful that you do that. You heard my introduction. And so let's just start off on what, in a broad sense, can be done to change the perception of older adults?
Well, that's a great question. And it's challenging, right? Because we live in a culture that devalues people at older ages. And early on in our lives, we're bombarded with so many messages, whether it's from our community, whether it's from the media, that help instill a fear of aging at a very early age. But I do think that there are some common sense things that we can all do to kind of identify ageism as it happens and to reflect on how we talk about ourselves, how we talk about other people, how we take in all of these media messages. As you mentioned, the article that I had published with the Los Angeles Times in February focused on language. And I want to make clear, you know, it was a very short piece, that language and the way that we talk about ourselves as we're getting older and other older people isn't the only issue. It's a multi-pronged issue. But that specific piece, which was very short, focused on the way that we talk about older people and really tried to advocate for not being afraid of using the word old. It's not a dirty word. There's nothing wrong with it. And really trying to take a page from the playbook of disciplines like public health, sociology, which really try to move away from gerontology, move away from using terms that can be stigmatizing, like the elderly or even seniors.
Well, Stacy, let me get to that.
Indicate that older people are like a separate and distinct group.
Yes, and I do want to pursue that. It's interesting to me that everybody wants to have a long life, but no one wants to get old. And I think that's, no one wants to be part of the club. Let's back up just a little bit, because you mentioned an important word with ageism. Define that for us, please.
Sure. So ageism broadly refers to negative stereotypes, prejudice and discrimination towards older people. And so that can be directed at older people, or it can also be internalized. We can have internalized ageism, and that means directing those kind of negative stereotypes, prejudice towards ourselves. Hmm. And that can result in all sorts of physical health problems and mental health problems. So it's really not good for anyone.
Everyone, if you just happen to join us here on the Dave Congleton program on News Talk 920 KBC, 96.5 FM, Hometown Radio, this is Gary J. Freiberg sitting in for Dave. And with us is Dr. Stacy Torres. She is assistant professor of sociology at UC San Francisco, and she writes about aging. And when you just now mentioned defining what ageism is, and with internal ageism, what does that do to us? Or what can that do to us when we have internal ageism?
So There are a raft of studies that show the negative effects of internal ageism, and having kind of a negative outlook on ourselves as we age can raise mortality risk, for instance, can contribute to poor functional health, even slower recovery from illness. There was a really interesting study that I came across that showed that having a positive outlook on aging can actually protect against dementia, even in older people that have a high-risk gene. It's a variant of the APO gene, and so that helps protect against cognitive loss. And as I study in my forthcoming book, internalized ageism and really feeling negative about ageism contributed to people being isolated and wanting to avoid other older people. So, for instance, there was this 93-year-old working writer who's kind of a main character in my book. I call him Eugene in the book. And I asked him once, you know, why don't you go to a senior center? Senior centers, you know, can offer a lot of services for some people, can offer social contact or low-cost meals. And he said, I hate older people. Like, I hate old people. And it was, you know, hilarious when he said it and funny, but underlying that was that he was cutting off some opportunities for all sorts of social services and contact because he didn't really want to be in a place where he felt was stigmatized, that was going to put him with a lot of downtrodden older people in his view. Mm.
So what kind of thoughts can one have about their aging when they are internal ageism that their peak is? I'm not going to put words in your mouth. Let me just ask that question. What kind of thoughts can a person have that is having internal ageism?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, it's varied. There's not a one-size-fits-all, you know, formula for the kind of thoughts that people have. But I do think that, you know, aging is complex. And, of course, you can have people who are in their 80s and 90s, very active, very healthy, able to do a lot of things. And you can have people that are at younger ages that have, again, even like my sister, multiple disabilities and are having challenges. But I think internalized ageism, when we see it, you know, these are kind of moments where people will qualify something. So, for instance, they'll say, like, oh, I'm having a senior moment, you know, and a moment of forgetfulness. Or I remember a lot of older people, you know, well-meaning and joking would say, don't get old, don't get old. But I think people can start to feel, you know, badly about their appearance, anxious about their cognitive functioning, and just feeling, you know, not wonderful or apologetic about being older. And so I think, you know, some of the things that we can do and that I even try to do as I'm getting older is to, you know, be open about my age. It's not a stigmatized thing to admit you're getting older. You know, my mother died when she was 52 years old, so I don't take any birthday for granted. I embrace getting older. I think also just trying to put yourself in touch with accurate information and portrayals about what it's like to get older. And so I think, you know, the media contributes to a lot of this fear about getting older. We have a lot of messages coming from business interests telling us, right, fight aging, defy aging. You know, there's this business of fear. And so it's very difficult. I mean, even I, you know, as I'm getting more gray hairs, can feel anxious about it. I remember thinking to myself, oh, should I start dying this at some point? And of course, all the people that love me and care about me in my life are like, hell no, you don't need to dye your hair. But even the thought that I could feel like worried about this, and I study aging and spend so many time with older adults who are vibrant and really taught me a lot about life, you know, shows how everyone is susceptible.
Yes, absolutely. And one of the phrases that I will never, absolutely never use is when someone says, well, at my age, and in my humble opinion, I think that that just tells us that we are restricted, that we are less. Well, there's lower expectation that you should have of me and that I have of myself, because at my age, and I, again, in my humble opinion, I prefer to look at life as a series of stages that we move in. And I think I'm more comfortable with that. Everybody, we are talking with Dr. Stacy Torres. She is an author of numerous articles on aging. She has a book coming out in January called At Home in the City, Growing Old in Urban America. And when we come back, let's find out about those terms, senior citizen, elderly, and how they impact us. Stay here on the Dave Congleton Program. We'll be right back.
Uh-huh.
All right, welcome back to the Dave Congdon program on News Talk 920 KVC and 96.5 FM. Of course, online, and then we stream starting these programs starting tomorrow. This is Gary J. Freiberg sitting in for Dave. And again, thank you very much for being here. I want to mention our next guest is Shannon McQuaid, and she's the executive director of Hospice San Luis Obispo. Details the different hospice organizations are in our county and their annual Walk for Healing Life. Stacey, I have lots of questions, but what's your website? I'm sorry to stumble. What's your website if people want to get more information about you?
That's a good question. I almost don't know it myself. So you can Google me, Stacey Torres. I think I'm the first Stacey Torres that comes up.
Okay.
But I also have a WordPress website, and that is, StaceyMTorres.wordpress.com.
Would you repeat that one more time, please?
Sure. It would be Stacey, no E, StaceyMTorres.wordpress.com. Thank okay. you, Gary.
Yes. Well, yeah, there's just so much great information. With your book, you studied a group of older adults in New York City and did your research from there. When you mentioned earlier the term senior citizen and elderly, how do you think that impacts older adults?
So I think it's subtle, in terms of thinking about, I think, here's my take on it, and this is in line with a lot of people that study aging and gerontology and disciplines that focus on the life course and life stages. We don't have really comparable terms for younger people, such as the elderly or senior citizens. A lot of times, we have terms like teenagers, but we would refer to them as younger people, young people, young adults. And so, if we just make a simple tweak to our language and think about older people, older adults, it takes a little bit of the stigmatization that has built up, I think, around especially terms like elderly, and just kind of makes older people another group of people, older people, younger people, people who are in their midlife, rather than kind of this big monolithic group, that's kind of anybody over 50 or anybody over 60 is kind of lumped in this group, the elderly. So that's one way of looking at it. I'm also a fan of actually a doctor, a geriatrician at UCSF named Louise Aronson, who wrote a book some years ago called Elderhood. And she's a doctor that treats older people. And she also advocates, instead of elderly or the elderly as this term that kind of makes people into kind of this other group, she advocates for the term elder to connotate respect for people over 65. And so that's an option. And I also think just reclaiming the word old, it's not a dirty word. Of course, everybody, not everybody, but lots of people are hesitant to call themselves old. But like I said, it's a great privilege to get old. And as right. I'm getting older, I'm embracing that as well. I like getting older.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, old isn't a dirty word. It's only got three letters. So it's not a dilemma. Tell me, with your research, and of course, this is going to be more in your book, At Home in the City, Growing Old in America, and then going to the WordPress website and seeing the number of articles and approaches that you've taken. What do you think, the struggles of later life, what do you think a couple of the main struggles of later life are?
Sure. So I spent time with older people in New York City dealing with a number of struggles related to aging, and then just related to aging in a place that was very expensive, which I'm sure a lot of people can relate to, as housing costs have gone up, cost of living has gone up, and especially on fixed incomes. And so the issues that they were dealing with that I think a lot of people deal with later in life are health setbacks, different financial struggles that came up as they were trying to make ends meet on limited or often non-existent savings, you know, limited pensions, Social Security, et cetera. They were also really dealing with the accumulated losses of their friends, their loved ones, family, and had to deal with some of these challenges around health and going to various medical appointments and trying to, remain socially connected, even though often it was getting more and more difficult to leave the house. And coupled with that was that, you know, they were dealing with gentrification. So the neighborhoods that they had lived in for decades and had grown up in, these were formerly working class neighborhoods that had undergone tremendous change. And so a lot of times people felt estranged when the mom and pop shop that they had relied on went out of business and they mm-hmm. couldn't afford, you know, the more expensive establishments that were coming in, and they relied on these places to socialize. So in my book, the people that I spent time with weren't really involved in like spiritual communities, religious communities, or spaces like senior centers. These were not the joiners. It was almost like they were, you know, instead of a bar, they would go to this bakery and connect. But it reminded me a lot of Cheers. Do you remember that show Cheers in the 80s?
Yes,
where, you know, everybody knows your name there and you can go and hang out. They wanted that kind of an environment.
Yes. Yeah, well, I would imagine that isolation could be a motivator for group, to making sure that you are socially connected and engaging with others and having conversation and not just being around the house and driving yourself crazy.
Exactly. They were very deliberate about like leaving the house no matter what was going on. There was one woman who told me no matter how depressed she was going to put her lipstick on and leave the house.
Mm-hmm. And that invariably is going to lift the spirits on being out. What would you say, again, after doing your research, we just talked about the struggles of later life. How about the joys? How can you rank the joys of later life?
Yeah, well, there were a lot of joys. And again, like I said, as somebody who was in her late 20s when she first met all of these older people, they really taught me a lot of life lessons that I still carry with me today. I think one of the beauties of the places where they went, where they could hang out with a lot of age peers, you know, people around their age, was that they laughed a lot. You know, they had these cultural touchstones or references to these shared experiences, such as like hardships during World War II. They had movies that they loved that they could talk to about with each other. They made dirty jokes. You know, they had like just lots of fun laughing. And I would say too, you know, the group of people that I spent time with were fortunate enough to be able to retire. You know, they didn't have to work until they were dead. They had often pensions, even from union jobs. And so they were able to, you know, they had modest incomes, but they were able to retire. And so they got to enjoy the freedom of having a flexible schedule and being able to like create their lives. And I would say that they were very deliberate, again, in making sure that they drew upon what the city had to offer them, whether they were more, healthy and able to kind of explore the city more and travel, or whether they were only able to walk a block or two and find some company on a park bench. So I think that there are a lot of joys, and I think also just feeling more comfortable in their own skin and feeling, the benefits of their resiliency. These people were survivors. They had gone through a lot. And so that really nurtured my kind of hope for my own old age, knock on wood, should I be lucky enough to get there.
Right. And that is the way to look at it. I had a brother that was killed when he was 28. And, you know,
I'm sorry.
Yeah. So, everyone, if you did just so happen to join us on News Talk 920 KBC and 96.5 FM, this is Gary J. Freiberg sitting in for Dave. And we're talking with Dr. Stacy Torres, and that's T-O-R-R-E-S. She is an assistant professor of sociology at UC San Francisco. She has a book coming out called At Home in the City, Growing Old in Urban America, has written numerous articles. And Stacy, just for those who joined us, once again, your website is Stacy, and then I haven't caught, is it a middle letter? I didn't catch what that is before Tori's.
Oh, M, like Marlene, that's my middle name. So Stacy M. Torres.
Great.
www.wordpress.com is my website.
Okay. All right. And that's really something I think that is what you're doing, because being a baby boomer, I was a long-haired hippie, man, you know, and now I'm at this stage, and I always want to believe that part of my heart is that long-haired hippie guy, and I'll look and go, wow. You're in the stage, and as I think that is something that surprises a lot of people as we've moved along, to think of the age that we are when we can connect back into our previous chapters in our life. Do you think your findings from the studies that you've done, do you think your findings are universal to humanity?
Well, that's a tall order and a big question. I would never claim anything like that. I would say that my findings are kind of valid for the small group of people I spent time with. But that said, there have been many studies, and I feel it myself anecdotally. I'm like, how am I 44? Like, how did this happen? I just woke up. I mean, I felt like a 7-year-old girl the other day. And I think that there is something to that, that we don't necessarily are like feeling, you know, our age. I remember my ex-husband was a high school teacher, and you know, he would laugh with his other you know coworker, and they were in their 20s at their time, and they're like, we're really just big kids in ties, you know, we're really just teenagers in ties, like, yeah. We're not the teachers here. And so I think actually that speaks to your point very eloquently about not feeling that we need to be limited in whatever age we are, whatever. I like to think of the life course not necessarily as stages, but as chapters of a book. You know, mm-hmm. And so whatever chapter of our book that we're in, we shouldn't feel limited or like we need to act, you know, like this expression, act your age, you need to act a certain way. Or I think that we can just embrace whoever we're feeling at the moment, or if we want to wear what we want to wear, we want to talk the way we want to talk, we want to say what we want to say.
Yeah.
We should feel that we should be able to assert our humanity and not feel, you know, chained by some preconceived notion of what it's like to be 90, 80, 70,
yes.
20.
Yes. Yeah. And I think, and we're going to have to wipe it up. Quite honestly, I have difficulty. Someone asked me my age, and to me, it's a complicated answer. It's not just chronological. There's biological, psychological, the attitude. There's lots of us that define who we are at this particular moment. Everyone, we've been talking with Dr. Stacey Torres, T-O-R-R-E-S. Her website is stacymtorres.wordpress.com. Check out her stuff. Her book will be coming out in January 2025, Growing Old in America. And coming up next is Sharon McQuaid. She's Executive Director of Hospice San Luis Obispo. Everybody, you are on the Dave Congleton Program on News Talk 920 KVZ, our hometown radio. Stay here for a few minutes, and we're going to be right back.
The 920 KVEC Podcast Network is presented by the Slo County Real Estate Podcast with Hal Swayze. Up-to-date information on the local real estate market on your time. New episodes weekly at the podcast link at 920kvec.com and wherever you get your podcasts. California DRE 0111911.